नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय श्री सुक उवाच इति ब्रुवाणो भगवं तत्रैवान्तरधीयता सर्वतश्चायं चक्षुर भवा अस्ते सहो मया श्रीशुक उवाच इति ब्रुवाणो भगवंस तत्रैवान्तरधीयता सर्वतश्चायंश्चक्षुर भव अस्ते सहो मया श्रीशुक उवाच इति ब्रुवाणो भगवंस तत्रैवान्तरधीयता सर्वतश्चायंश्चक्षुर भव अस्ते सहो मया श्रीशुक उवाच इति ब्रुवाणो भगवंस तत्रैवान्तरधीयता सर्वतश्चायंश्चक्षुर भव अस्ते महो मया.
Translation. Sukadev Goswami continued, after speaking in this way, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu, immediately disappeared, and Lord Shiva remained there with Uma, looking for him all around with moving eyes. Thereafter, in a nice forest nearby, full of trees with reddish-pink leaves and varieties of flowers, Lord Shiva saw a beautiful woman playing with a ball. Her hips were covered with a shining sari and ornamented with a belt. Because the ball was falling down and bouncing up, as she played with it, her breasts trembled, and because the weight of those breasts and her heavy flower garlands, her waist appeared to be all but breaking at every step. As her two soft feet, which were reddish like coral, moved here and there. The woman's face was decorated by broad, beautiful, restless eyes, which moved as the ball bounced here and there from her hand. The two brilliant earrings on her ears decorated her shining cheeks like bluish reflections, and the hair scattered on her face made her even more beautiful to see. As she played with the ball, the sari covering her body became loose, and her hair scattered. She tried to bind her hair with her beautiful left hand, and at the same time she played with the ball by striking it with her right hand. This was so attractive that the Supreme Lord, by his internal potency, in this way captivated everyone. Purport. In Bhagavad Gita 7.14, it is said, Daivi hyesha gunamayi mama maya duratyaya. The external potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is extremely strong. Indeed, everyone is fully captivated by her activities. Lord Shambhu, Shiva, was not to be captivated by the external potency. But because Lord Vishnu wanted to captivate him also, he exhibited his internal potency to act the way that his external potency acts to captivate ordinary living entities. Lord Vishnu can captivate everyone, even such a strong personality as Lord Shambhu. So in the in the spiritual world, then the reciprocation with the devotees and Krishna is based on service. That the devotee wants to actually serve Krishna and please him. There's no interest in any kind of attracting him back for their own pleasure. Therefore, the reciprocation is in pure service. So it's a very unique position. Well, in the material world, then the external potency acts in such a way to attract and captivate the living entity. So everything that happens here is done in such a way that we will find it to be very beautiful. And then we will want to enjoy that beauty. We want to exploit that beauty. So therefore the material energy acts differently than the spiritual energy. The material energy acts to captivate, while the internal potency acts to serve. So this is the difference between the two. So here Lord Shiva, he cannot be captivated by the external potency, because being the Lord of it, then he is not attracted by it. But the internal potency is attracted by it, because there then that is where his Lord is, Sankarshan, and so he serves the Lord on that platform of the internal potency. But here Vishnu, just to captivate him, then exhibited the internal potency, but in such a way that it acted like the external potency, because the external potency acts that to draw the attention to exploit, because that is the system. If you you draw, that means, but you control. It is not drawing to serve; it's drawing to control. And then when you control it, you enjoy it. But at the same time as the other things, they are enjoying it. That's the thing. One has them in one's power. So then one can enjoy it or exploit. But the person thinks that they have the external energy in their power. This is the uniqueness of the system. But it's done in such a smooth way that one doesn't understand. So it's a very different manifestation of energy. So therefore, even in the spiritual world, then they'll have the male and female forms and relationships. But being that everything is based on service, then there's no attraction to exploit. In rasa, then you have to have the enjoyer and the enjoyed. So then by how one person acts, they draw from the other person a mood, a reaction. Just like if you approach somebody and you're very angry, you'll draw from them an angry or a defensive reaction. Well, if you approach them in a very pleasant way, you'll draw from them a very, amiable response. So that is the nature of rasa. So in the spiritual world, because it is service, then the Lord accepts that service. And so then there's no trying to, it is natural enjoyment. But in the material world, then they draw from somebody the mood to enjoy. And that's how you control. You present, it's like bait. You put out something to eat, which is enjoyable, and then the fish, wanting to enjoy that, then comes and eats that. But by doing that, you catch the fish. So it's an exploitive. It's presented as service, but it's not. It's the means to capture. Well, in the spiritual world, then that is not there. The service is meant in its pure form, to serve. So there's not an exploitive trying to catch. Therefore, it's up to Krishna how he wants. If he wants to reciprocate with the living entity, he can. If he doesn't want, then that is up to him. How he wants to reciprocate, freedom is given. That there's no strings attached in the mood of the internal potency service to the Lord. So this is what is going on here. So in the material world, then everyone is captivated by this external potency, and thinks that there is something, they will control it, they will enjoy it, because you leave yourself open, then you are controlled. Like that. The woman will make herself available so that it'll attract the man. And the man will surrender to the needs of the woman, so that will then attract the woman. Then she will control and get what she wants. You know, so in this way it goes both ways. Both use this potency. So this is the workings of the external potency. So then this is then pointed out that it's something different from the internal potency. Any questions on this? Or?
So as practicing devotees, when we serve within our capacity, whenever we serve someone, and if we do get upset, not based on in the teaching mood, but in an exploitative mood, if we do get upset or disappointed or angry, that means our desire to get something of the person was
Therefore,
the person wasn't actually doing service, it was actually putting bait out to get something back and did not get it.
Like that. You know, so the whole point is if we can't control, we can't enjoy. So that is the why there's so much emphasis on the service mood, because that's the nature of the living entity. To control and enjoy, that's the Lord's ability. But His controlling and enjoying is not exploitive. By His controlling, then we become situated properly. By His enjoying, we become happy. Because we being part of Him, if He's happy, then we become happy. So it's actually an expansion of rasa. It's not exploitive. Well, in this world, we're trying to enjoy our happiness doesn't necessarily make the other person happy. If there's mutual exploitation, then we call that both are happy. It means you allow the other person to exploit you and you exploit them. Then it's called happiness. But if that's not there, if you can't control them and them control you simultaneously, then it's not considered a good relationship. If it's just one way, then one of the parties will be frustrated. You know? So the devotees then avoid this, understanding this, then the mood is service, so then they don't look for how to control and enjoy. They look for how to serve, like that. So then they don't project those kind of moods, those kind of energies. Because the energy in other species of life, then they just manifest the energy that matches that species. They don't know that it's there. They don't know they can control it. They actually can't control it. They are just run through the experience. You know, it's just like some ride at the carnival. Once you're put into that, then it's nothing you can do about it. It just goes the way it goes. But the human being can control the energies. They can actually be aware of when they're using attractive energies, when they're not, when they're using they can understand this. So if they're trained, then they can tell the difference. So they know how to use the energies. So generally, for the devotee, then they will just put these energies on neutral, like that. So then they won't, they'll control it in this way. Otherwise, you see, the energy, if you put it out, it creates something. Or if you pull it in, it creates a vacuum and sucks the other person in. But if you keep it in neutral, then it does neither, like that. So that is... that is the science in this connection.
Yes. In the association of devotees, you know, we start a conditioned nature, so there's still, you know, some manipulative tendency or whatever is there in the heart. Is that considered offense? If you deal with devotees in a way where you expect some gain from it.
If you're conscious of it, then it's to be avoided. If you're not conscious, then it's not good. You'll get some reaction for it, but it's not considered an offense. It's just considered bad habit. You know? So the whole idea, if we become purified, we start to become aware of it, either by our own endeavors or by others, you know, others' input. So then the idea is we should become aware of what's there and then try to correct that. It doesn't mean the activity changes, it means the mentality of the activity changes. You know? It's just like, let's say someone's an outgoing person. So outgoing is not the problem, it's why you're outgoing. If it's for your own purposes, then it's a problem. If it's for service and to create a nice environment to for people to work in, then it's considered good. So it's nothing's bad. It's a matter of whether it's pure. So that's a matter of seeing what's there, or somebody is very reclusive. Now, why are they reclusive? Are they reclusive because they're just shy, or they're reclusive because they don't like anybody? You know. So then, depending upon that, then one is considered more pure, and the other is not. But then, even that shyness. Now, why are we shy? So are we shy because we're afraid that people will think we're stupid, or is it shy just because we don't want to impose on other people? You know, and so like that. But then, why don't you want to impose? Now, you don't want to impose because you don't want other people to impose on you. So therefore, you don't impose on them and expect the proper reciprocation. Or is it because you don't want to disturb others? You know, so like this, every quality has its good and bad. So the main thing is, by chanting, then we purify that, and by becoming conscious. That's the whole thing. Is conscious is the principle. Then you can put Krishna into that consciousness. Just like dhyan means meditation. Meditation is the principle. You focus on one place. So once you're focused, then you put Krishna there. But if there's no consciousness, how you can put Krishna there in that consciousness? Right? So therefore, we become conscious by so many ways. We should be able to just directly become conscious of Krishna, because he's the nicest and most wonderful. But the tendency is we may not, because of our material conditioning. So therefore, all the rules and regulations of spiritual life and social etiquette make us conscious of our surroundings. Right? It means if you know social etiquette, then you know, okay, I'm in a formal environment, so therefore I can't, do certain things. I have to be very careful and watch what I'm doing, and, my dress is proper, that I'm standing, sitting, talking properly, I'm, reciprocating with the people properly. So we're very much conscious. We're completely on guard. Formal means you're always conscious, while informal means you just relax and may or may not be conscious. So in that formal situation, being conscious of everything, then you could take that to the next step, where you could bring Krishna into that. You're conscious of how you stand, but how does Krishna want you to stand? You're conscious of how you speak. How would Krishna want you to speak? How would you deal? How would you dress? How would you, move? All these things. So then that brings in the next stage, that you're conscious of your activities. First you have to be conscious of what you do. Then next is conscious of what you do in relation to the rules and how Krishna would like you to do it. The next is that then you're conscious of the energies at work that make those things. And then after that, then you get into just Krishna. Those things remind you of Krishna. They don't remind you of... They're not the energies working here. You understand the origin of those energies and the pastimes that are connected with those energies. So like that, it's just the gradual taking of the consciousness from the gross to the subtle. Like that. So that is the reason for the regulation and various directions. It's not a restriction, it's a way how to act. It's actually a freedom. This is how you can act that will free you from the material energy. So material energy, if you want to stay in it, then yes, it has 8,400,000 ways you can act. So therefore, it seems that there's great freedom within the world. But if you want to get out of the world, then there's only one path out. So therefore, how you behave then is limited. But it is actual freedom, because real freedom is getting out of the material world. Behaving as you like here is not freedom, it's bondage. It's just like the man in the jail. Now, if he wants to act as he likes, he can yell, scream, take his tin cup and rub it on the bars and throw things around and turn his bed upside down and yell and scream at the... he can be free and exercise his freedom. But by that activity, he's not going to get out of the jail any too quickly. Well, if he sits there nicely and behaves nicely and talks nicely and does his work nicely, which seems very limiting and restrictive, then he'll get out many years earlier for good behavior. So that's just, even in the material world, it works like that. You can go, you want to apply for a job, you go for your interview. You can act however you like to act and not get the job, or you can act properly and get the job. You have that freedom. So that is the choice. And it's the choice we have. So therefore the rules and regulations are to teach us what is good behavior that will get us out. What is the behavior to get us out of this world? And then if that's not interesting, then there's more rules that show us then what are the activities that will keep you in this world, but within the world you'll be prosperous. You know, it'll be good for you. You know, you'll experience, you know, so-called material happiness and prosperity. And then if you don't want to follow that, then you can do whatever you like, you know, and it opens the door for, you know, 8,400,000 species of life. You know, it's like, you know, that freedom is there. You know, you want to act like a dog, yeah, great. You know, then not only that, there's at least 300 kinds of dogs, so there's plenty of variety. You know, so you can go for it, you know. So that's the freedom that's there, is what you want to choose. You know, does that make some sense?
Like the sort of exploitative mentality. And it seems like it carries into every being to some degree, as long as it's there.
Everything.
But like even like serving the devotee, serving a spiritual master, you theoretically know that this is good for me, but it's, going to give me some benefit, spiritual, whatever. So there's some motivation for myself.
Yeah. No, this means motivation will always be there. No activity is done without a goal. Without goal, you can't have activity. So just, it's what is your motive? It's what's your goal? Having a motive is not what's wrong. It's what is the motive. If your motive is to please the Vaishnavas, then that is good. You know, but if you're wanting to please them, so then they will praise you and say, oh, you're doing service so nicely and things like that, then that's not good. If you're just doing it because you know that the Lord's devotees are so dear to him, so we want to please the Lord, so therefore we please his devotees, that will please the Lord, then that will be considered proper. Like that. So just one becomes conscious of these things. But otherwise, there's nothing that we do that is not has some purpose to it, material purpose when we're conditioned, and then as we become conscious, then we can gradually overcome these, like that.
Can it be like sometimes you have the right sort of mentality, and you do it, and then some days it's not so good, and then back and forth.
Yeah. That's just practice. It's just like when you're starting something new, like a child when they first get up to walk, it's not that they're, you know, you have an Olympic runner, you know, happening. You know, they'll stand up and the next thing they're either on their face or on their backside. You know, and then next day they a few more steps, you know, then it's on their face or backside. You know, then they get halfway across the house, then it's, you know, like that. So it takes some time. But if we're determined, then we get somewhere. Just like in the any material activity, if you have determination, then you become good at it. If you don't have the determination, then you'll never become good at it. Everything takes practice. So therefore, if we practice the spiritual life and are determined, even though some days it's good, some days it's not, then gradually become more and more good till it's proper. You know, then we're freed to, you know, see to that the fine points of the mentality is right. When the activity is right, then we can see that the mentality within it, then we can focus on that. Otherwise, when we're focusing on the activity, then we may or may not be able to appreciate, you know, what is our mentality. So then both those have to be seen, that the activities are proper, and then the mentality becomes corrected. Okay? Yeah.
If you're unsure of your motivation, like, you know, not sure whether you are actually doing it for praise or something, is the proper technique is to actually have confidential devoted friends and discuss this sort of thing with them and try and see where you're really at? Is that
yeah.
a way of dealing with it?
That's one of ways to deal with it. But otherwise, you just watch yourself, be conscious of it, and then you'll see. You know, at some point in your activity, if there's something not proper, at some moment it'll come out. You know, it's like that example of you have the the jackal. And one day he was moving around in the village at the place, man who dyes things, you know, house, and he was looking for things to eat, and he fell into this pot of blue dye. So he came out and he was blue. So then he ran off back into the forest, and all the other animals saw him, and they had never seen any blue animal before. So very unique. So then jackals are very clever. So then he dreamt up a story that yes, he has come to be the king. You know, they are so fortunate. They have been so well behaved that now he has, you know, come out of his mercy too. So then he was like that. He was their king for a while and got all the facility and all the service of all the animals of the forest. And one day he was sitting on the throne, and then there was out in the forest a bunch of, you know, a pack of jackals, and they started howling. And then unconsciously, then the blue jackal on the throne, he started howling in response. So then all the other animals understood he was a jackal and then chased him out. So like that is that we're doing. So something we do it at some point, we will note if we're conscious of it, you know, something like that. If we know what we're doing it for. So we're serving prasad, we don't know what we're doing it for, and then somebody says that was nice, and then what's the reaction within our mind, then you can tell. You know, like that. Or after you've served and, you know, like that, and no one said anything, so are we looking for, you know, why no one said, you know, then you can understand. So maybe at the time of service you can't understand. But that doesn't mean we should stop the service, because that's the regulation, that's what we're supposed to do. What we're supposed to do is correct the mentality, like that. So then service is done, and then we're conscious of the mentality.
The first process is to practice being a servant and follow the rules and regulations, and then slowly you rise, and then you can adjust the fine points of the right.
Yeah, yeah. But it's and don't, you should always also be careful. It's one of the tricks of Maya, because when we take up Krishna consciousness, we're not so conscious. So we don't notice motives, we don't even notice things that are in the mind. But as we become purified, we start to notice. So then sometimes the tendency, Maya tries to trick us by saying we think these things were never there before. So actually it's not getting better, it's getting worse. So before, life was so simple, I didn't think all these things. Now all these things are coming in my mind. So therefore the process is not working. No, that they've come into your mind, you're aware of them, that means the dirt is coming up. Like if you want to clean a closet, the door is closed, you know stuff's in there, but you don't know what. You know, but you open the door and start pulling things out, then you start to really realize what's in there. You know, then you see what are your attachments. So when it's in the closet, it's been there for years and the door is closed, you never looked. You know, it's like kind of like, yeah, well, you know, we never use this stuff, we get rid of it. Fine, yeah, no problem. But then when you actually open the closet and start pulling things out, then you think, wow, I could, you know, this is a, you know, oh, where has this been all this time, you know? And then it becomes very difficult to throw the things away. But because voluntarily we put them in that closet, so voluntarily we have to throw them out like that. So that's why then they will come through the mind. And if you just let them pass, then there's no problem. Then they'll go. But if we, you know, take a second look, you know, it's like that. That's the point. It's the second look. The first look is not dangerous. It's the second one. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Isn't that exploitative mood, which prevails here in this world? Is it in any way connected with impersonal conception?
Yeah. Means how do you say? When we become envious of Krishna, then that means we become basically envious of everyone. We become envious of ourselves, because the soul is servant of Krishna, so we're envious of that position. We want to be the controller. We want to be Lord. So we become envious of everyone. So that's the establishes then one in the impersonal, because it takes us out of the personal realm. Because the real personal realm is us as servant of Krishna. So then we have to pull back from that. That puts us into the impersonal.
Yeah.
then we become attracted to material energy and we exploit that. So by our attachment, then we find personalness. But actually, if you get down to the bottom, it's impersonal. You know, I mean, the person you see, something happens to a member of the family, everybody's so disturbed. But if you scratch deep enough, then you'll find it's because of what they get out of it. You know, but because that's all you have in this material world. Therefore, you know, it's considered virtuous. You know, the attachment for the members of the family and their interactions and their dependency and all that. But it's purely exploitive. But because there's no alternative, you know, that's all one has is this material body and material senses and relations. Therefore, then it's acknowledged as if they're used for upliftment, then it's considered virtuous. If it's not, then it's as the Bhagavatam says, the forest of adverse fruitive activities. And you'll notice in there, adverse fruitive activities, it's not sinful activities. It's not talking about sinful nonsense, karmic rascals. It's talking about people following the Vedic culture. That's why it's in the Bhagavatam, because then it applies 100% to devotees. Is that if they're performing all their nice, wonderful, you know, activities, but not with Krishna in mind, it's adverse, because it's not taking us to Krishna. Like that. You know, so many times we take it, oh yeah, this is about the sinful, karmi, nonsense, rascals. No, it's not. It applies to them, yes, but it applies to the devotees. So even the most wonderful material situation, if it's not connected to Krishna in some way, then is adverse. It's exploitive. Like that. Therefore, it has to be connected to Krishna, then it's glorious. Then it's a useful medium. Because then the purpose is to please Krishna. You may have your own purposes, but the ultimate purpose is Krishna. So then, by that, then it will be, you will be purified of those lower attachments. But if it's not connected to Krishna, you know, then it's just for ourselves. It's selfish.
Can we say that in personal conception, it's a cause of exploitive mentality?
Basically. No, just like you see, those who are impersonalists, their deity is Lord Shiva. So Shiva is in control of the material energy. So it's a natural combination. But the reason people have problem means the root, in one sense, of problems in dealings in the material world is the impersonal aspect, because we're not serving, we're trying to enjoy. But at the same time, is the actual reason for problems in the material world is because of personalism. We're persons. We're a person, the other person's a person. So it's actually personal while there's problems. It's personalism that creates the problems. But we're, because of our own impersonal mentality, we're not acknowledging the personalism. That's the problem. We don't acknowledge the other person's, you know, needs. Neither do they acknowledge others. You know. So then, but the only to acknowledge personally, just the modern New Age thing of being personal is still impersonal. You know? Because we, as person, if we really acknowledge who we are, we have to acknowledge we're servants of Krishna. So then that creates the commonality. When there's Krishna, then it works. You see, energy, if there's a common point, it works together so smoothly. And if there's not a common point, it doesn't get along at all. Like that. You know, so that's a very, very common thing.
I've heard that in North America, sort of survey land, so many, you know, surveys they running on a month and a week, and there was a survey between religious groups, and in our Hare Krishna community was the opinion was that it's the most impersonal group. In our units, dynamics in our Yajna's temples.
Mm-hmm.
Can you explain how can we coexist in a personal school, and how is impersonalism creeping in?
It's not a matter of creeping in, it's already there. Means where is the Brahma Jyoti situated? Right? Means if you have the material world, the spiritual world, and the Brahma Jyoti, where is the Brahma Jyoti situated? In between. Okay. So now if you give up the material culture, but you don't take up spiritual culture, where does that situate you? So that's the answer. It means devotees give up the, you know, just natural, you know, contemporary culture that they grew up in, if they had any culture. Sometimes it's good to give it up, but but whatever is considered to be, you know, proper dealings, they give that up also, because they consider it maya. But at the same time, as they do not accept the, you know, the Vedic tradition. So that's why it's impersonal, because in general, the devotees don't have a culture. They have a philosophy, but no culture. Because they refuse to accept the culture. You know, because it's to their, vision is considered restrictive. And the living entity, uncontrolled living entity, doesn't want to be restricted. Like that. So it's seen as restriction rather than a means of social interaction. Like that. So that's the problem. As a devotee, basically, it's either lack of contemplation of it, or understanding, or lack of purity, that they're unable to appreciate it. Like that. So Prabhupada says, philosophy without religion, because religion is, varnashram is religion, then is mental speculation. Therefore you see so much speculation. You know, is it this, is it that, what's this, that, so many philosophies, so many this. It's just because there's no culture. And we find in the Indian community, then it's the opposite. Prabhupada says religion without philosophy is sentiment. So you have the Indian, very nice, sentimental, they're pure enough to follow it. They don't know why they're following it, just their family tradition follows it. Nice people interact very wonderfully. They have very good family relationships. Like that. Families don't break up. Like that. But no philosophy. And we're the opposite. We know the philosophy, but adamantly refuse to accept our culture. Saying that it's this, that, you know, it's so much, I won't be happy, right? You look at the Indians, right? It means nowadays it's being broken down by the Western. You go, there's no divorce, it works, they're nice, they interrelate, they support each other, they take care of their elders. No such thing as old age homes in India. Now they're coming, but before, they aren't. Your house is the old age home. You know, the children are taken care of, it's nice. But we can't accept it. Right? Because we're so conditioned to nasty, bad behavior that nice behavior is too much for us. We can't handle it. It's too intense. We talk about the need for emotion and this and that, but if real emotion comes, forget it. We can't handle it. We can't handle the intimacy that is there. Because intimacy means I have responsibility. Intimacy means responsibility. Relationship means responsibility. If this person has been so intimate and done so much for me, means I have to reciprocate that. I don't want to reciprocate that. I only want to get. I don't want to give. So in that way, how can you have a culture? So giving up means the other religious groups, it's external, of course. But at least they follow the externals. So it's at least socially interactive. It's pleasant. Though phony, but pleasant. But the devotees see it's phony, give it up, but at the same time won't take our actual traditional culture. You know? There's so much opposition to it. And so if that was taken, then you have a cult. Then it would be so nice. And then people would be amazed. They would be amazed. But what can you do?
I was trying to say that even in the Hare Krishna culture that Prabhupada's giving us.
Yes. I mean, it's just talked about, you know, he's talking about it here. See, he talks about Prabhupada here, Vedic culture. And if you say, yes, Vedic culture, Varnashram, and you say, we should follow it. And then people say, we don't follow Varnashram, we follow Prabhupada culture. What's a Prabhupada culture? He's talking here, Varnashram. No, we don't. They just don't want to follow it. They don't want to restrict themselves. It's a very serious commitment to follow the Vedic culture. Because the relationships then become so deep, that means the commitments are deep. Shallow relationships means shallow commitment. Deep relationships means deep commitment. So who wants to make that commitment? Because if I make the commitment, it restricts me. I'm not free. So freedom is the thing. Do what I want to do. You know? So that's the problem. Is I want to be free, I want to get all the benefits of the intimacy, but I want to be aloof from it. But not aloof from it meaning, aloof from it meaning liberated. Aloof from it meaning I'm still free to gain everything I want materially. How I want, I take what I want, but everybody, so that's exploitive. Though it's cloaked in this wonderful new age, new speak, you know, all this and be kind and this and, you know, conscious and all that, but It's not. It's very shallow. When it push comes to shove, they're not there.
So devotees doing that when we're saying we're householders, are we still doing that? We're saying we're householders, but I mean with my family don't want to be devotees. So it's, you know, you're not really living and you can't really commit yourself yet.
But see there's material commitments that are there. That can be done. Because the relationship is material. Means, you know, the bottom line is grihastha life is material. Like that. But the trick is grihastha means how to engage the material in Krishna's service. That means it becomes spiritualized. It's not spiritual. You know? Brahmacharya, grihastha, vanaprastha, sannyas, they're material. They're not spiritual. But they are something you can spiritualize. Like sinful life, to spiritualize it is very difficult. It's not a high quality thing to offer to Krishna, right? But the Varnashram is high quality social life that can be engaged in Krishna's service. You know, so that's the thing. It is material. It has to be recognized as material, and we're in it because of material needs. But why we want Krishna? So therefore, we should find out how we can fulfill those needs according to Krishna's direction, that pleases Krishna. Right? Man wants to be with woman, woman with man. Okay, that we may be unable to get over at this moment. But then, how does Krishna want man and woman to associate with each other? So if you follow that, it makes Krishna happy. Then we're happy. Otherwise, all this talk, we'll do whatever we want, and I'm watching my God brothers and God sisters get married for the second and third time. And okay, so they're in their 20s, 30s, I don't mind. They're 50 years old and getting married for the third time and having daughters. They're going to be 70 years old before they can get out of household life. Nonsense. Why? Because we won't accept our own culture. That's all. Takes them three times to figure out, okay, how to behave with a wife. It takes a woman three times, four times to figure out, okay, maybe I have to behave like with a man like this and then they won't walk out on me. So everyone wants to be free, but what's the use? What has the freedom got? What has the Western culture given anyone? I mean, unless one likes that, of course, variety is the spice of life, then you could talk, then, you know, Elizabeth Taylor's the acharya, you know. So then, you know, I mean, I haven't heard of devotees, you know, getting up to 8 marriages. I've heard of 6, but not 8.
What would you say about Islamic culture?
See, depends on what you want to look at. You know, why? The woman walking, you go down to the beach and the woman walking around in her G-string, that's praise and worship of woman? You know what I'm saying? It's exploitation. It means it's come to such a gross thing that the girls can only get the attention of the boys if they allow such gross exploitation. Then they'll get the boys' attention. Right? If they manifested some subtle nuances of shyness, they wouldn't even notice. Right? So they got to go out there and walk around naked. Then the guy notices, wow, it's a girl. You know? So therefore, what's the meaning? Like that. See, it's not so much what is the externals of it, it's what's the mood behind it. You can find good and bad in both. Like that. It depends on the mentality. It depends on the mentality. So therefore, it's just like this. Let us say today, somebody just comes along and gives you the hope diamond. Right? Now, what are you going to do with that? You're going to walk down the street in your hand and, hey, check this out, you know? Right? Or you're going to put it away, lock it up and everything. So therefore, in the Islamic culture, women are so valued. In the Islamic culture, their whole social status depends upon their women. Their women are good, their family is good. Their women are bad, that's it, they're finished. Unsophisticated and tamasic way of dealing with the problem. You know what I'm saying? That's there. What I'm saying is the religious purposes behind it are out of respect. But how the modern usage is applied is not necessarily proper. You know? Like that. So, therefore, all this stuff, it is basically useless discussion. Because it's not going to get you any closer. You have to understand what are the principles of religion. Means the discussion can go on if you understand what is the nature of a woman. Right? So unless you understand that, then how do you discuss anything? Right? Means woman is a reflection of Radharani. Radharani's energy. Energy is fickle. It has to be attached to, because it's always moving, it can't be satisfied. It has to be attached to something that's fixed. So fixed is Krishna. So when the female is attached to male, it feels peaceful. So if that's understood, then you have to know the science. What is that? What does that mean? So therefore, how to attach it? What is a man? What is the male principle? Right? So therefore, it's different than female. It's the opposite. Therefore, the dealings are opposite. How a man deals with a man is different than a woman. You know, the man sees another man. Ah, how are you? Whacks him on the back. You don't do that to a woman. You know, it's the opposite. You know, same time as, you know, the women with the women, when they're with each other, they can be as, you know, nasty as they please, but with the men they can't. It's the opposite. So you have to know what it is that you're dealing with. Then you can decide what's good and what's bad. It means everything that the Islam is dealing with, it's not all bad. Some aspects are bad, some aspects are good. But unless you have a standard, what is your standard? How can you say it's bad? By what standard do you say it's bad? Or what standard do you say it's good? What is your guideline? What are the rules by which you're judging, right?
My mother's reading this book and she's really horrified that, you know, that they're treating women in such a, you know, horrendous way behind the scenes, you know.
Yeah, well, here, they treat them in front of the scenes here. Yeah, so my point is, what is your standard? It's nice to say these things. What is the standard by which you judge? But what bodily platform? Who's decided the bodily platform? Who's made the rules? It's bad. Bad means there must be a good. What is good? Okay, that's bad. What's good? What is the good way to deal with a woman?
The Vedic way.
Okay, so now who's established the Vedic way?
For us, Prabhupada has.
And where did Prabhupada get it from?
The Vedas.
And where did the Vedas come from?
From Krishna.
So who's established the Vedic culture?
The Krishna's.
Yeah. So then, that means Krishna sets the standard. And then you judge whether something's good or bad by that standard. Otherwise, if we have a speculative standard, then it's bad. We have a speculative standard, then it's bad. So this is the how you say? Therefore, one has to see what is good and what's bad. You know? So therefore, in this material world, everything's got some good and some bad. But you judge it against what Krishna's given, then you can get the real insight. You know? So they're bad, why? Because they're exploiting the women. They may be protecting the women on one side and valuing on one side, but on the other, they see them simply as objects of sense gratification. So therefore, they're rough with them. And of course, you must understand in these books, it is they take out extreme cases. If we wrote a book on Australian culture and took out extreme things, down at the pub there, the guy, you know, punched out his wife and, you know, did this and that, we could make Australians look like, you know, the scum of the earth. Easy, no problem. You know? So, therefore, that's also a point. What is the purpose of the point of the person who wrote the book? How much do they know the thing? How much do they know what's behind? Why? What's the original thing? What did Muhammad have in mind when he established these rules? And how much difference is the present application of that from others? Like you go to Turkey, it's very different. Turkey, you don't find it at all like what you'll find in, let's say, Afghanistan. Right? But other Muslims don't consider what the Afghanistans are doing to be necessarily representative of how you say, you know, Muslim culture. So therefore, you know, it's very external, the whole. The point is just what is Krishna's standards, and you see according to that. You know. Then, you know, so exploitation is not good anywhere, but it's not because it's Islam, it's because you're dealing with materialists. Right? You know, if your mother happens to be Christian, what about the Spanish Inquisition? You know, I mean, they had a very simple formula. They caught you because you were accused of being a witch. Then they would throw you in the water. If you didn't drown, if you drowned, you were innocent. You weren't a witch. If you didn't drown, you're a witch, so they take you out and burn you. So now is that something glorious? Right? We want to go into, you know, there's nice books on the papacy, right? One of the king, I forget, Pius the 27th or Pius the 20th, something like that. He was called Pius because he admitted he had 17 concubines. So they were so impressed with his honesty that they called him Pius.
Innocent.
Huh?
Huh?
Oh, innocent. Oh, okay. So someone misread. Yeah, innocent. Yeah. So, like that. So, you go into anything, you know, what's behind the scenes, and it's nasty, dirty, stinky. You know, it's like, there's nothing that's not. If it's materialistic, it's bad. So therefore, the best of the materialistic is if you follow the culture according to Krishna's direction. But you have to know what it is. You can't take necessarily modern usage as proper, unless it is in line with what the scriptures say, because the mood is the most important. Right? If the mood is understood, then it works. It's pleasant. Everyone is satisfied. If it doesn't work, means it's not being applied. So it's not, religion hasn't been applied. Right? I mean, say what you like, the most liberated woman, when she hits around 40, she starts looking around for something to marry. Like that. Because they don't want to get old alone. So it's you have to know what is the nature. So then you see. Then it starts to work. But devotees don't apply themselves in this. They get some of the external and deal in what they think is the way, but they have to see what's the usage of it. The theory is one thing, the application is what is important. So just because you've applied the theory, but if you apply it wrong, doesn't mean it's right. But then if you get married, then there's certain facilities. You don't get married, there's other facilities. Right? Like if a woman gets married, then she can, and her husband's present, she can dress as how she likes. Husband's not present, she dresses a little less. She's not married, she doesn't dress at all. So there's those restrictions, because then they match. The religious point is, a woman dresses nicely, it becomes attractive. So who's she supposed to attract? The husband. Therefore, the husband's there, she dresses how she likes. Husband's not there, she dresses less, because she doesn't want to attract another man. And if she doesn't want to get married or is unmarried, she doesn't dress fancy at all in ways that will attract. Otherwise, then what's the meaning of her saying, I don't want to get married? I don't want to get married, but I'd like to just have the happiness of the control that, you know, when, as I walk by, everybody melts. You know? Like that. So then, you know, but that's not honest. That's not religious. Because that doesn't match the mentality. If that's the mentality, then you do those things that will create that. You know? Does that make sense? So then that's the whole point of what is religion, is know what it is and deal with it in that way. Then it's considered proper. Right? You know, like you want to cook. So when you cook, then your purpose of cooking is to please Krishna. Therefore, you're not thinking of how, you know, you would like things, or, you know, you've cooked a thing and then before the offering you've taken some and put some away so that you get some later, and you don't do these things. That would be irreligious. It's against the principles of the nature of cooking. Cooking, you're cooking to please the other person. Whether you get any or not, that's not in the equation. So therefore these other things would be considered improper, or not maintaining standards of cleanliness. That would be considered irreligious, because you're cooking for Krishna, who likes things pure. So that's how it works. It's a science. It's not so much ritual. Ritual is there because we don't know what is the science. So therefore we have to take a natural cultural interaction and turn it into a ritual. Then by practicing that ritual, then you become habituated at it. But if you don't know what's the purpose of it, it will remain a ritual. It won't become culture. That's the thing. The difference between ritual and culture is whether you understand it and you value it. If you value it, it becomes culture. If you don't value it, it stays ritual. So generally you'll find as devotees, if they do anything with the Vedic, it tends to be ritualistic. Therefore, no culture. And those that have found that they appreciate and they understand and value, then you see that they're very natural, nice people. And those that don't, then you'll find them to be a little rough. You know, rigid.
So how do you get to the point where it becomes like that?
You have to understand. Well, you should try to understand it.
Is it through knowledge?
Both knowledge, practice, association means those who are following, you associate with them, you gain from them their mood, try to understand, you practice. So by practice and contemplation you get realization. But you need both. If you just practice, you get the sentiment. You just contemplate, you get knowledge. But if you practice and contemplate, then you'll get realization. So realization is values. Then it becomes nice. Then, because then the balance is something else. You know, is that okay? Yeah. So probably this should be the last, and then
just
sort of
thinking about Varnashram. Then I remember that verse in the Bhagavatam, Kalo Sutra Sambhava, and we're all born as sutras. So isn't Varnashram pretty easy? If that's the case, if that's really your own health sutras?
No, we're born sutras, we don't stay sutras. Hare Krishna. We fall down into mlechas and yavanas. That's below shudras. You know, that's the problem. You know, if we stayed shudras, then it would be fairly easy to follow Varnashram. Because the shudras are human. So we're born human, but shudra. And then, you know, when your mother comes along with your, you know, Gerber's baby food, you know, ground up liver, then we fall down to the mlecha platform. Yeah. So it should be, but the thing is we've the modern philosophy, the modern culture is directly opposed to the nature. It's just saying it's a very wonderful thing, is that in the name of freedom for women, then they're being more and more exploited. See, before women weren't so free, you know, they had to put up with, you know, having a very, you know, fairly stable, though maybe not so exciting, but a family life that lasted throughout their life. You know, same husband, same kids, you know, pretty boring. You know, they had a house, fairly stable life. You know, but now they're free, you know, they can, you know, go through, you know, a marriage every 2 to 3 years, you know, and enjoy the, you know, variety of life, you know. Like this, because now they're free. So it means they're free to be exploited. Before they weren't. A girl in her father's house, you couldn't exploit her. After marriage, you couldn't exploit her because she's with some other man. So then, you know, what to do? Pretty boring. But now, so if she's in her father's house, then, you know, it means now we have contraception, so, you know, no problem. And when she's married, as long as the husband doesn't find out, you know, great. So women can be exploited like anything. You know, so that's the propaganda. We don't see that it's getting less and less. If women weren't being exploited, they'd be free, but they'd be dressed. Right? But they're free, but everybody can look at them. Everyone can enjoy them. And one can say, well, they enjoy it. Yes, they enjoy controlling the men. They dress like that. Everybody on the whole street walks down the road. I've seen it myself personally. That a woman who's really dressed, you know, to catch attention, if you don't look at her, she gets angry. I've seen that. Walk down the street, they get really frustrated because everybody on both sides of the street is looking at them. And they act as if, you know, nothing's going on, you know, as if they're just in their own living room with no one there. They just float down the street, but they notice everyone's looking at them, but they notice you're not looking at them. They keep looking, and how come this guy's not looking? And it's very frustrating to them. Because they want to control. So that's how they're enjoying. And then the man is not going to complain, because they always like looking at nice women. So therefore, it's fine for them. And for the businessmen, it's great, you know. I mean, before, a full dress didn't cost very much, but now hardly any dress costs, you know, 10 times the price. So it's, you know, less material, you know, you have to, you know, less, how you say?
More.
Yeah, you know, and you get more money. And plus it's less to design it. Before you had so much cloth, you really had to do something. Now it's, you know, you don't have to do much, you know. You know, so it's businessmen are real happy. You know.
The hippies were sort of an outcome of certain trends and certain cultural patterns in the society, and they didn't like many aspects, so they rebelled against it. But unfortunately, they did. They got some liberation here and there. But they didn't have a culture, they used to call it counterculture in those days.
Yeah.
But they didn't have a real culture to tag on to it. You know.
There's no standard.
And they couldn't latch on to any other culture.
Most of them are working on Wall Street now.
So Some who were fortunate, they became Hare Krishnas.
The best of the hippies.
And those who are not fortunate.
Oh, best of the hippies.
That's when it happens, but we have to have something positive to cling to.
Yeah, yeah.
Otherwise, we'll be lost. Now that hippie will be lost.
Because there's no standard. I mean, the hippies, their idea was, you know, love, peace, and it's a nice idea. And the original flower people were very pleasant in that. Yeah, I think they lasted about 3 years. And then they started to degrade. Because they don't have a standard. Since love is sense gratification, they didn't actually understand spiritual love or transcendental love. Then if sex is there, then all other sense gratification, then sex is there, intoxication will be there, like this. So then it just will just degrade. You know, till
the rest of the society was so powerful, they rejected them. And then they couldn't stand on their own. They had to march back into the same mainstream again. You know.
I mean, you got to feed the family. Lost. Yeah, said so you have to feed the family.
Yeah.
It's interesting, as the next culture after the hippies was the punk. And the punk was just a resuscitation of the 1950s, you know, which was just the opposite of what it was exactly what the hippies were rebelling against.
It's coming back, don't have positive thinking.
No. That's why when we say a standard, we look at something, oh, this is very bad, you know, how these ones deal or that. What's the standard? You know, oh, how they deal with the Aborigines is bad. But what's the standard? So you can say it's bad. Bad why? It may be bad. You know, no one's, but why is it bad? If it's just bad from some sentiment and emotion, those are going to keep us here, even though we're devotees. If we understand it's bad because they, as human beings, they should be protected, you know. And what does protection mean? Protection means doesn't mean exploiting them and bringing into the white culture as servants. It means either leaving them in their own. They want to live in the forest. Let them live in the forest. You know, protect them so that they have a forest to live in. At the same time, if they do come in, then they have to be educated. They have to be the different things, and then they should take part in the culture here.
That's what they did with the Aborigines in Australia.
Mm.
They ruined, destroyed the whole culture, the whole community.
Mm.
And now they are just totally lost. Mm. They didn't have any compassion. They just wanted to keep them out of the social structure. And that's what they became. They are, and now they are really rounding on the society. They are doing all sorts of crimes and because they didn't have any use.
No. So it says, so therefore you have to see, if you have a standard, then you know what's right or wrong. So that's the difficulty, is there has to be a standard, you know. So without a standard, then, you know, just like before, as you were explaining about the gambling law. So the government approved it to get revenue, and that the city council didn't approve it, because they were worried about the social repercussions. But the government wasn't worried about social repercussions, they were worried about revenue. So their standard is revenue. So whatever gets the revenue, it doesn't matter what happens to the society. While the others, the city council, they're generally known, they're not so much into revenue. Their main thing is to create a nice atmosphere in the community. So therefore they were worried about the social issues. So depending upon what is your standards, then you will view something. From one side, gambling is completely bad because it destroys the culture. From the other side, it's one of the best revenue spinners you can get. So therefore, on that standard, it's great. So that's the problem, is who sets the standards? So if God sets the standards, then it makes it easy. Then everybody has the same thing to go by. You know, there'll be, of course, natural some difference according to the time and the place, and how people here would follow things would be different than America or in England or Europe or Australia or Africa. You know, there'll be some difference because the people, the climate, the facilities, the lifestyle. There'll always be some, but the main standard is the same. Therefore, in India, you have so many cultures. The Gujarati is different than the Punjabi, Rajasthani, UP, the South Indian, all these. It's all different. And then within that, they have different communities. But they're all based on the Vedic culture. So therefore, you'll see a similarity. You know, some little differences in that. You know, some they ride in on a horse for their marriage. Some they're carried in. You know, some they walk in. You know, some the garland is put on this way. Some the garland is put through the other garland. You know, all the little, who cares?
Yeah, all the details.
Yeah, they're details. But the principles are there. So then you have a cohesive culture. So if God's principles are accepted, then you apply them to the local circumstance, you know, what will match, and then, but at least you have a common standard that everybody can agree with. You know, then it's only a matter of disagreement or agreement on how it's applied. What's the detail? Some may feel this detail is better, but at least the standard is the same. But when you have two different standards, then there's no question of any discussion. You know, how the council and the government will discuss, because they have two different standards. So there is no platform. But if both of them were taking revenue as the standard, then one can say, oh yes, revenue is great, but by doing this it will create some social problems, so we have to get the revenue, but let's find a different way. Or if social was the thing, then the government said, let's do like this, and then you say, hey, this is going to destroy the thing. It says, okay, so since the culture is the most important, we'll drop this form of revenue. Then they have something common, but because they have nothing common, then there's nothing to talk about. So that's the thing, is we as devotees, unless we have a common standard, then how there'll be community? There can't be community. Then the devotees will find, they, even though there's so many devotees, they all live together, they all have same spiritual values, but when it comes to cultural, they don't have common. Therefore, then there isn't community. So if we accept Krishna's standards, Prabhupada's standards, as he's given it, then there's a start. Then we can see, okay, how to apply those standards here. You know, here is different from Melbourne, is different from Sydney, is different from Alachua, is different from, you know, the manners. So therefore, then we will see what works here. But there's at least a common standard. Then it's good. Okay, so we should end here. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivarinda ki, Chaitanya Gaura Premanandaya.